Make Me Smart is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
All right, help. Help us. Help. Start the show.
All right, come on.
Start the show.
Come on. Yep. There we go. Come on. Here we go.
Hello.
Hey everybody, I'm Colin Rizdahl. Welcome back to Make Me Smart. No, I figure it's my turn. You know, I think you got it a couple of days in a row. Together, we try to make sense of this day. No, that's not the way it goes. It's trying to make the day make sense. That's what it is.
Yeah.
Good grief.
Yep.
Holy cow.
I believe someone else may have taken your version since we started this tagline. I'm Molly Wood in a snarky and punchy mood because it's Thursday and it is hollowed out shell Thursday. Oof. Because 2020 is not going quietly into this dark night.
Yeah.
Mm-mm.
Not at all. But that, of course, is why we do the Make Me Smile at the end. But first, we got to do the news, and I want you to go first because I have, as they say, some questions.
I mean, I have so many links in here. Two of them are the same story. Yeah. One straight up is not. Just don't even care. Hey, you know the other day when I was like, yeah, I have a bad feeling about this hack?
Mm-hmm.
So, and the weird thing is that the stories about the hack keep getting worse, right? Every day that passes, we find out that there were more intrusions that are more terrifying. For example, the Energy Department agency that designs nuclear weapons has now been added to the list. And CISA, which is the federal cybersecurity agency in charge of securing critical infrastructure, said in a briefing released today that this hack represents a grave threat to governments, federal and local, and that includes critical infrastructure. And also that this SolarWinds software, the original vector that was identified, is not the only way that hackers were able to get into various government networks. And in fact, some of those other vectors are still unknown, or at least CISA hasn't said what they are. So with every minute that passes, the news gets worse. And what's so interesting in my second piece here is there was, you know, a New York Times editorial published yesterday by this guy, Thomas Bossert, who was the Homeland Security Advisor to President Trump, Deputy Homeland Security Advisor to President Bush, George W., who said, you can't overstate how bad this is. We have to behave as though the Russian government has control of all of the networks it has penetrated. We don't know what's going to happen next. The person that I interviewed for Tech Tomorrow and earlier this week, but they both said the same thing, which is most likely the results of this hack that we see or don't see or aren't even aware of will be more disinformation, more division, more fear. And this op-ed in the Times calls for basically like, hey, everyone, could you please do some stuff? Like, Congress, you need to pass the National Defense Authorization Act like now. Could you do some stuff? Trump, could you just maybe cool it with the crazy and do some, you know, make it clear to Russia and any other state actor that this is unacceptable behavior and lead us out of this because it's very, very serious. Obviously, none of that is going to happen.
Yeah.
And I also find myself in this position where I'm like, I don't even know how we're supposed to report on this knowing that disinformation and fear are the goal, because I think increasingly it feels like it's simultaneously a hack and a hack and leak attempt.
Right. So that's what I want to ask you about, because I saw your Twitter thread this afternoon making this point that, you know, we're reporting on what could be disinformation, and maybe the news of the hack is disinformation that's being fed to us somehow. We just don't know. And I guess my question is, do you think this hack had as its purpose disinformation, or do you think they were poking around to see what they could see, and we're all just so paranoid that we're like, oh my God, it's Russian disinformation, because look, we've been taken advantage of by the Russians before.
Well, the paranoia is like part of it, is definitely part of the goal in a way, is to cast doubt on, I don't know, to cast doubt on our sense of security about our nuclear weapons, about the treasury. And that's why I find myself in this sort of weird position around reporting where it's just like, okay, so how do we, so if like sources close to the administration come and say Department of Energy and the Nuclear Security Administration may have been penetrated as part of this attack, like, what are we supposed to do with that except be more worried? Mm-hmm. And if we are more worried at a time when we're already at each other's throats, what is the result of that?
Yeah. Yeah.
And because there is, and then this is the part where I am obliged to point out that literally the only mention of this that has come from the federal government is from CISA.
Oh, please.
There has been no word from President Trump, no word from any other official at all.
Yep.
And you have, so then you have this, again, like an invisible disagreement on the reality, if it is not even acknowledged at the level of the federal government and multiple federal agencies have been breached, like the surreality of this is just like staggering. It is staggering. I don't even know what to, like, whatever you were hoping to accomplish, hackers, I like, job done. We're a mess.
Yeah. Huh.
Hollowed out, slightly hollowed out shell. Just like
a
tiny
bit. A little bit.
So there. Yeah. So you have that. On the plus side, I did want to note that I have now seen a couple different reports. There's a like a attorney in Detroit, maybe the state's attorney, I think, in Detroit, and then two former presidents of the Arizona State Bar and five other attorneys have jointly filed a rare ethics complaint to the state bar against 21 attorneys who participated in Trump campaign legal filings, saying that, for example, confidence in the legal system is seriously eroded when attorneys treat lawsuits as a platform for broadcasting gossip and innuendo utterly devoid of factual proof as a political stunt. Expect more of that. Don't know if anything will come of it, but expect more of that.
Yep. Yeah, well, look, we raised it the other day, so.
Yeah.
Okay. So, yeah, hot mess. So mine is, and look, I'm a guy who pays attention to the news and is reasonably well-informed, and this one just kind of came up and bit me out of nowhere, this headline in the Los Angeles Times today. Mm-hmm. First paragraph of which is, the availability of intensive care unit beds throughout Southern California reached 0% on Thursday, which is just amazing. There's got to be like 25 million people who live in the area defined as Southern California for the purposes of this pandemic, and there is zero intensive care unit bed availability. Now, it's not my just physical beds. It's also, you know, staff and doctors and nurses and equipment and all that stuff. But basically, you get real sick, and there ain't nowhere for you to go. And it just – look, I'd known it was coming, and we talked about the governor's announcement a week or 10 days ago that he was going to impose these new measures, and it was going to based on ICU availability and all this just – but I, like, turned around today, and it was like, no, sorry, we're done. That's it. Mm-hmm. And somehow Southern California has become in the late stage of this pandemic – and I'm saying late merely just in calendar terms because it's late in the year, but I don't think we're late in this pandemic. We have become what New York was in the spring, right? Where, you know, if we were a more compact geographic area, we'd be hearing sirens and all that stuff because there's no ICU availability. What? You guys, come on, man.
I've had this conversation now with like three people over the last 24 hours too, just about how invisible this wave of the crisis feels.
Yeah.
Like that, like you were saying, it crept up on you, you know, and there are still plenty of people who don't know anybody who's been sick and the numbers keep going up. And yet there's no like awareness. And I'm not even really trying to put this is not a shame game. Like everybody's in their house, you know, everyone who's not touched by this is in there. You're not seeing the reality of it. News crews are not in hospitals and maybe they should be, but they'd probably just be in the way because it's, you know, and it's dangerous for them to be there. But yeah, like. A friend of mine told me that a former housemate who works in a hospital in San Francisco had just a complete mental breakdown, you know, has been diagnosed with clinical depression and PTSD, and said that she was having to step over bodies in hallways at the hospital because they were out of storage. And I was like, whoa, whoa, whoa. In San Francisco? Mm. Like, I'm like you, right? We pay attention, we think, to the news. Yep. I didn't.
Yeah.
I thought we were doing all right.
Yeah.
Like, it's just, it's like a war in a foreign land. It's just hidden and like out of control.
Yeah. Yeah. It's craziness.
Yeah.
It's craziness. And it's only going to get worse, right? I mean, the next 3, 4, 5 months until vaccination takes hold and the weather gets nicer and people can go outside and all this jazz. So I don't know if you saw that picture today of people in New York eating outdoors at a restaurant on a sidewalk in the snowstorm. And I'm like, oh, man, these people are desperate.
It was crazy. I know. Yeah. And people were making fun of them. And I was like, they've been in their – people have been in their house for 9 months. They're doing – I mean, if you're that desperate to see your friends, like, it's because seeing people is non-negotiable, obviously. And we have not done a thing. Yeah. That doesn't end anywhere. Anyway, like, give them a break.
Yeah.
They probably left a huge tip.
Move us out of here. Let's hope they did, right? She was like, no, man. Okay. I love mine. So it turns out... So Donald Trump was, before he became the president of the United States, he was a casino owner in Atlantic City. Not much beloved at all. He went into bankruptcy several times, let his properties deteriorate, and basically absented himself from that city after his business prospects went south. But the buildings are still there. And I read in Rolling Stone today that you can actually bid on a chance to push the button that's going to blow up Trump Plaza Casino in Atlantic City, New Jersey. They're going to implode it and redevelop the site. Yes, yes. So it's right off the boardwalk in Atlantic City, and the bidding is now at, live bidding starts in 32 days. The estimate is from $500,000 to $500,000. There are 12 bids in, the high of which is $52,500. I honestly thought it would have been higher than that.
Yeah. Well, it's still early.
Yeah. It's for charity, by the way. It's for charity.
Yeah, exactly.
It's the Boys and Girls Club of Atlantic City. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, that's hysterical.
Yeah. Isn't that great?
Is both hysterical and clever and delightful.
And it's almost a little bit too on the nose, but I just
it's a little on the nose.
It's yeah.
My Make Me Smile had me smiling on my way out of bed already, and then I got even more smiley when I saw that President-elect Joe Biden is expected to nominate Representative Deb Haaland to lead the Department of the Interior, the country's first Native American cabinet secretary, which is amazing. And it would be the, you know, as head of the agency that manages the nation's public land and also treaties with the indigenous people who were here first. I just think this is remarkable.
For sure. And I think it's really cool.
Incredible and long overdue. And just,
I'm glad you came up with that one.
Legitimately warmed my heart.
Yeah.
But I have to be honest, it did not warm my heart as much as Kimberly's damn Uncle David. Because he, in addition to just making beautiful art and cooking wonderful food and taking care of his ailing husband, Bear Bear, the other David, just composed an original, wonderful holiday tune. And put it up on Instagram about how the holidays should remind us that, like, we can love each other all the time. And, he's amazing at singing. It has my favorite thing in the world, an awesome key change. It's, vocally complex. normally it makes me really uncomfortable to watch someone just sing at me for 3.5 minutes. And yet I just sat there and I watched the whole thing and I was, singing along by the end. And then this morning I just was, going around the house singing. I mean...
You got to check it out too, because he's got the Christmas sweater on, he's got the Santa hat, and he's got a white beard, and he looks like Santa, and it could be just awesome.
He just does, and he's such a so good as it's just legitimately wonderful. You have to go and watch it, and just
Tony will put it on the show page, and you guys can check it out there. How about that?
I feel really bad that I did not have time today to send it early, so we could have pulled some sound for the pod, but it's just going to make you go watch it. And that's great because it'll be more views for Uncle David.
Yep. for sure.
Because they're amazing. Amazing.
Oh, my goodness. Right, we're going to go out
there
on
is
that
hope
Uncle
in the
David
world.
Note. There is hope. If Uncle David can do a fancy song for 3.5 minutes, all y'all can just power on.
About
through,
right? love. Literally That's just right. all about That's love. Right. Oh, so good. Okay, I'll stop.
Economics on Tap tomorrow, the YouTube live stream as well. Usual happy hour activities in our usual places. We'll talk about what made you smart in 2020. 3:30 p.m. Out here on the West Coast, 6:30 on the East Coast. Yeah.
And you're going to want to join us for that because it's the last one of the year.
Yes. Yes.
Yesterday,
I should have said that.
We asked you what you learned in 2020. We're still looking for your answers. Please don't be like, the violin and also Korean, because that's rude. It no, rude. I'm just kidding. It actually can totally be that. Whatever you learned, we want to know if you found a way to. I was talking about my friend who like lost 18 pounds and goes on 4-hour bike rides. And I'm like, I don't want to hear it.
Yeah.
Sure. However, I want to hear it if it's from you. Send us a voice memo. Make me smart at marketplace.org.
Newsletter comes out tomorrow because it's Friday. This week, I look, it was probably going to be the busiest week the Postal Service has ever seen. I will tell you, I am not satisfied with their service of late. I've got some issues, Mr. DeJoy. Anyway, it's going to be some delays is the bottom line there. Sign up for it, would you, at marketplace.org/newsletters. Hook yourself up.
I'm going to make a controversial suggestion, which is that everyone should give the post office a break and not send out the Christmas cards. Just don't do it.
Really?
Email it. Email the cards. Come on.
But that's not. No. Because you got that special basket that you put them in on the coffee table in the living room in front of the tree, and that's, you can look at them and pass them around.
Just email them. Do the post office a solid.
I'm not buying it. Make Me Smart is produced and directed by Marissa Cabrera, who is sitting there right now holding her head in her hands saying, what are you people even talking about? Tony Wagner is our digital producer. Erica Phillips does the newsletters and the Make Me Smart skill on those smart devices.
Today's program was engineered. Erica Phillips is the hardest working woman here, like right after Ethan Peretz.
Yep.
Today's program was engineered by Drew Jostad, who's getting hecka famous in his own right. I hear him on the credits and our segment. Ben Holiday and Danny Ramirez composed the short and long version of the theme music. Our senior producer is Donna Tam, and the executive director of On Demand is Sitar Nieves.
Oh, man.
Strong communication skills are critical for success in business and in life. Hi, I'm Matt Abrahams, and I host Stanford Graduate School of Business's Think Fast, Talk Smart, the podcast. Each week, I sit down with experts to discuss the best tips to help you with your communication skills, from conflict management to mastering small talk to tackling communication anxiety. Join us and start to develop and hone your communication skills. Listen every Tuesday wherever you get your podcasts or on YouTube.